outside Phoenix, Arizona. Hi, everybody. This is Dave Hodges, host of the Common Sense Show, coming to you proudly on the Republic Broadcasting Network. And we have a really exciting show for you tonight. But before we go to that show and our guest, John Moore, let me preview what's coming up on the Common Sense Show, because we might get so busy here and jam-packed with calls that we may not have time to preview. Next week, we will be joined by Grant Jeffries. And if you've never heard Grant blend in biblical prophecy with the times we're living in, as well as his book on the invisible government, you're not going to want to miss this. And the following week, on the 28th, we'll be joined by the consummate insider, Catherine Austin Fitz, who's the former number two person in HUD under Bush 41, as well as a partner in Dillon and Reed, and what she has to say on the global elite's attempt to depopulate the world will shock you, as well as other things. But tonight, we're going to turn our attention to global warming, or what pretends to be man-made global warming. And we have a guest on tonight that I'm sure many of you are familiar with, who's going to shed light on the global warming controversy. And you all know him as John or J.R. Moore, who has a show here on RBN, and we'll let him tell you about that. But we're going to get into the global warming facade as far as being man-made and what actually is behind it. And do we have, to my producer real quick here, do we have John yet? Okay, very good. Okay, because my screen is not up yet. We will have that problem corrected here shortly. But without further ado, let's go to fellow RBN host and activist John Moore, and welcome John to the show. Hi, John. How are you? Hey,
Dave, good evening. Thank you. Good to be here.
Well, it's great to have you, and I want to thank you up front for taking time out of your busy schedule to join us. I got a copy of your DVD this week and had a chance to look at it, and I stopped just short of the ending because I want to be spontaneous, but I'll tell you, the first part of it, John, scared the living bejesus out of me. And
that's the intention, and it sounded like I got the desired result.
Well, I have to tell you, John, when I first heard about what we're going to talk about tonight, I was very, very skeptical. Maybe I'm a prisoner of my academic background. Among things, I teach statistics at the college level, so I'm a kind of show-me, prove-me kind of guy.
Dave, you're being polite. You thought I needed a tinfoil hat, didn't you?
Well, I thought the subject did, but this is going back several years, and I kind of left the topic alone, and I've been on this man-made global warming crusade for some time. I've had Tim Ball on the air, as well as other guests, to debunk the global warming theories of Al Gore. But I have to tell you, John, that this is shocking, it's stunning, and there's a lot of collaborating data. So let me throw it back into your court. Where do you think we should start with this story?
Oh, boy. I can start at my beginning point when two researcher friends of mine back in 2000 told me about this, and quite frankly, Dave, I thought they needed tinfoil hats. But I respected them, and I went to another friend who has some serious confidential sources in the federal government, and I told him what I was concerned about, and he thought I needed a tinfoil hat, but he went and checked it out anyway. He gets back with me a couple weeks later, and he says, John, it's exactly what you said it was. I've known about this since 1979. I've been getting ready for it since 1979. It's going to hit us. It's going to hit us hard. So that was my beginning point, and that was around, like I said, the year 2000, 10 years ago.
So you've actually been on this for 10 years?
Actually, I was working on another related project that I did not know was related, going back as far as the early 1980s, a research project I was involved with at a Superfund cleanup site outside my hometown, St. Louis, Missouri. It turns out what they were building out there beginning in 1979 was a command and control center. It took them nearly 20 years to build this thing. And I didn't know what it was related to or exactly what its purpose was until these other pieces started falling into place.
Well, we're going to see what those pieces are, and we're going to bring our audience up to date as to exactly what we're talking about. I think we've teased them long enough, but we've got to stop for a break. We'll be back on the other side. Stay tuned. We'll be back with my special guest, John Moore, after this.
I live my life like this. Go tomorrow.
All I've got. Power to the people.
Welcome back, everybody, and thanks for joining us tonight on the Common Sense Show. Hi, I'm your host, Dave Hodges, and joining us tonight is fellow RBN host John Moore from the John Moore Show that airs from, John, it's 3 to 5 on Sundays, correct?
3 to 5 Central
yes.
Time.
I couldn't remember if it was 4 to 6 or 3 to 5, but 3 to 5 Central. And I have to tell you, John, that I first heard about this issue as it was airing on your show from one listener that we probably have in common, Sheldon from Tucson.
Oh, yeah.
And Sheldon shot, he shot me an email and says, you know, you really need to get on top of this, Dave, and find out what this is all about. So, you know, having my skeptic hat on, I began to look at this, and I said, this is kind of frightening. But let's start at the beginning, okay? Man-made global warming is largely what a lot of us are saying.
It's a cover story.
It's a bunch of nonsense.
Well, it's serious nonsense.
It's pseudoscience as far as it being man-made and CO2
right.
and so
right.
forth.
There was a photograph. I did a presentation Saturday. One person in the audience saw it, and you may have seen it also. It was in England, and this cow standing in a pasture had a large plastic bag attached to its back with a tube going up its rear end to catch the flatulence. And it was one of the funniest things I've ever seen, Dave, but that's how silly this thing can be. Yeah. But it is very serious. It's a cover story to conceal what's really going on.
Well, it is a cover story, but we are seeing rising ocean levels, melting ice caps, and increasingly violent weather. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely, we are. And you hit some of the high points. There's a lot of detail behind those high points.
Well, let's talk about where this is possibly emanating from. I mean, first of all, this is serious because our coastal cities will be threatened. How long do you think we have until rising sea levels actually threaten the coastal cities?
Well, you've hit the question that is the question most people focus on real quick is a timetable. And it's a time frame, not a specific date. The serious researchers, including Professor McCannion, who is a credentialed scientist, I'm a homicide detective, not a scientist, but credentialed scientist, he agrees with myself that by December 12, 2012, these events, these Earth change events, will either be already over or so far underway it won't matter. So we're in the time frame right now, Dave. Keeping in mind the federal government basically spent 15 years spending hundreds of millions of dollars getting ready for this. Given the short time we have left, we essentially have no time. The original government plan to be ready was by December 31st, 2010. They moved that forward by one full calendar year closer to us, and they gave themselves a date of December 31st, 2009, which, of course, was 2 months ago. And they're still making preparations. In fact, just this past fall, NSA, no such agency, National Security Agency, announced they were building a new computer center duplicating what's at Fort Meade, Maryland, about 20 miles south of Salt Lake City in the desert. And I've been there. It really is desert. Now, what they've got at Fort Meade, Dave, is 18 acres of Cray mainframe computers underground. That's what they'll be duplicating south of Salt Lake City.
Well, aren't we also seeing an influx of other agencies to the Midwest, such as groups going underground below the Denver International Airport?
Well, it's not just the Denver International Airport. It's the Denver area. Denver, the airport has, I don't know how many 100,000 square feet underground. It's a lot. But here's several Google searches that people can do to find the government's press releases, not John Moore's information, but the government's press releases and mainstream media. That would be CIA and the word Denver, NSA and the word Denver. How about this? Plum Island, like a peach, apple, plum, and the word Kansas. Now, Dave, if you and I were going to study really fun things like foot and mouth disease and anthrax, wouldn't we put it on an island out in the Atlantic Ocean? That'd be a pretty smart thing, wouldn't it?
Absolutely.
Well, that's what they did. Plum Island is 100 miles northeast of New York. Now they're moving it to the most productive agricultural real estate on the planet, Kansas. They're doing it because they have no choice. And once again, you do the simple Google search, Plum Island in Kansas, you'll find the government's press releases and mainstream articles in mainstream recognizable newspapers like the Washington Post making these announcements.
Well, with the rising coastal levels and some of the other effects that are coming with this natural cycle, I and a lot of people thought originally that the changes would come more systematically, more progressively. We'd have time to prepare.
Gradual,
but you're making
right.
this sound like it's going right. to be sudden, cataclysmic, and come like a thief in the night.
Well, yes. And in the summer of 2005, I inadvertently stumbled onto the a massive source of information, and that's retired veterans of the U.S. Navy Submarine Corps. August of 05, I was having lunch with a friend of mine who is a veteran of the Submarine Corps, and he told me about a classified briefing he attended in 1985 about violently rising ocean levels, abrupt climate change, and the Navy told him that the Arkansas-Missouri Ozarks is one of the known safe havens. Now, since then, Dave, I've debriefed so many of these Navy veterans, I've stopped counting. Working in corroboration with them, I recreated the Navy's map that was shown these men beginning in 1979, the classified map showing the new coastline of North America, which you saw on my DVD.
Oh, are you talking about the one that came from that parallels Gordon Michael Scallion?
Now, Scallion's map was my starting point. I had to have a starting point, and Scallion's map east of the Rockies is fairly accurate except for Wisconsin. Wisconsin on the Navy map is almost completely gone.
Yes.
Now, Scallion's map west of the Rockies is not even close to the Navy's map. The Navy's map shows considerably less damage than Scallion's map does. But it was a good starting point, and it was helpful in working with these sailors, these retired submarine veterans, to recreate to the best of our ability the Navy's classified map. One of these veterans, by the way, has agreed to go public. He doesn't have a pension he can lose because he's on 100% disability from being radiated 8 hours a day, 7 days a week, while having a hammock strung between the warheads of the Polaris nuclear missiles.
So he doesn't have a lot to lose.
He doesn't have, there's nothing they can take from him. They've taken everything from him but his life. These other men all have pensions at risk, and they're not about to go public. For what gain? There's no gain. There's no upside for them. It's all downside.
Well, no, what you're saying is exactly correct. My father was a 20-year veteran and involved work in naval intelligence, and my mother receives his pension, and if I were to repeat some things that I think I might know, you notice my choice of words, she could lose her pension.
Right, right. Yes.
And all, well, and all benefits deriving from that.
Precisely, and why would somebody do that? There's no upside. It's all downside. But my friend Tim Spencer, the retired Navy veteran, they can't take his pension from him. He's gone on several radio shows with me, and he's an excellent researcher, by the way. He continues to feed me a lot of good information. He was the first person that notified me of the February 1st release of the Pentagon Quadrennial Review Report, which talks about military bases being underwater, violently rising ocean levels, mass migrations, starvation, and riots. And that's, of course, a Pentagon-generated document that came out 2 weeks ago tomorrow.
Do you know, I recall hearing Scallion in a venue where he was saying he foresaw tents of hundreds of thousands of people outside Yuma, Arizona, that were fleeing the California coastline. Is that the kind of mass migration we're looking at?
Absolutely. Most countries, including ours, 50%, 75%, usually it's a high percentage of people live within 100 miles of a major body of water, usually an ocean. That's the case with most countries. And ours is similar. The two-thirds of our population lives within 100 miles of the East Coast, West Coast, and Gulf Coast. The interior of the country, what they typically call flyover country, has a lot more sparse population compared to these coastal areas.
And you think this is going to happen in conjunction with these 2012 prophecy dates?
The 2012 Mayan prophecy is being promoted by the same people promoting global warming behind the scenes. It's being promoted because it's too far into the future, Dave. We know from the build-up to Y2K, and I was part of it, that most people, if they did anything at all, they may have done something in 1998. Those that did much at all in terms of any numbers was 1999. We know that most people, most of the time, won't do anything until the last 12 months, one full calendar year, before the event. And that's what the powers that be want. And it's not a matter of panic. They don't fear panic. What they fear is the people that own the small businesses that provide half the jobs of this country making a very calculated decision based on good information to lock the door and get out of Dodge. They don't want that, and that's their goal, is to maintain people working in those positions, keeping half the country working.
Well, I got to believe, too, the reason that they want to keep the people working is to keep them distracted so we don't break down the gates of where these people will be hiding in their safe refuges.
Well, that could be part of it, but anything that disrupts normal commerce will disrupt what they're attempting to pull off also.
Understood. Yeah, that does make sense.
They rely on UPS and FedEx just like you and I do.
Well, let's go back and let's lay out a date here. What date, if we're not looking at 2012, December of 2012, we're looking at what date?
It's a time frame that we're already in. This coming calendar year of 2010 and 2011, we will see the following. We will see increased violent weather events, increased violent, destructive seismic events, and volcanism, both. The rising ocean levels right now are incremental. The violent part of the oceans will be right towards the end, and there's a couple of things that could cause it, and I'm still learning about these things. One would be
let's hold that thought right there and pick that up when we come back from the break.
Go ahead.
Let's find out what can trigger these rising ocean levels, and we return with John Moore after a word from our sponsors. Welcome back to the Common Sense Show. Joining us tonight is our special guest, John Moore, who's host of the John Moore Show, also here on RBN from 3 to 5 on Sunday nights. And, John, you're doing double duty tonight, and I appreciate that. And as we went to the break, I wanted to let you finish your point about the rising sea levels and what's making you believe this is going to happen and the implications for it.
Right. Well, it goes back to 1979. The federal government, the astronomers, they've been aware of something out in space for a long time affecting the orbits of our other planets. And they decided to go look for it with the Pioneer 10 space probe, and they found it. It is commonly known as the 10th planet, Planet X, also called Wormwood. They found it in 1979 with the Pioneer 10 space probe, and they've been tracking it ever since. Astronomy is basically mathematics, Dave. And, you know, they use these instruments, but what they do is mostly mathematical calculations. And they calculated pretty quickly the approximate time frame that this thing would be affecting us, which of course is right now. And they began making their preparations, the major governments, United States, Russia, and China, and governments that have the financial wherewithal. I doubt Zimbabwe is doing much, but the major governments are all making their preparations, including the Vatican, of course. And the time frame is right now. We have, we will see incremental things happening, becoming more severe as we get deeper into 2010 and into 2011. What I keep my eye on is earthquakes and volcanism primarily. The weather stuff is pretty much in our face. We had a hurricane here in the Ozarks April the 8th, 2009. And Dave, I'm a long way from the nearest ocean. I mean,
That's
500 or 600 miles from the nearest ocean. We had a hurricane, and even the local FM radio station called it a hurricane. That's not supposed to happen. You're not supposed to have hurricanes over land, but we are. Hurricanes are cyclonic storms, just like tornadoes and typhoons. They're all electrical in nature, and our planet is having very bizarre electrical energy events coming from our sun. The sun was in a extremely low period of activity this past year. It's starting to get active again with some Class M flare just in the past week or so, and some speculation about another Class M flare coming up in the not-too-distant future. All these events appear to be related to the 10th planet interacting with our planet directly with electrical energy and gravity, the sun directly with electrical energy and gravity. So that's what I keep my eye on, and us other and the other researchers I work with. We're now having earthquakes where there shouldn't be earthquakes, like Oklahoma City north of Chicago.
There was another one in Oklahoma City yesterday, I believe. It only hit 3, but the fact that they're having them is amazing.
Well, here's something you may not be aware of. Charles F. Richter developed the Richter scale. He died, I believe, in 1984. Shortly after his death, the Richter scale was reduced by one full number value. So a 3-point earthquake on the original Richter scale, it would now be a 2-point earthquake. So the earthquake that happened in Oklahoma yesterday on the original Richter scale would have been a 4. The 7.1 that happened in Haiti a month ago would have been an 8.1 on the original Richter scale. They talk about shoddy construction in Haiti. There aren't many buildings. They can be built, but there aren't many buildings that will survive an 8.1 earthquake. As you probably know, Dave, when you go from 7.1 to 7.2, you have a 100% increase in the magnitude.
Yes.
So when you go from a 7.1 to an 8.1, it's a 1,000% increase in the severity and the magnitude of the shake. That's massive.
Also going to see accompanying volcanic explosions. I mean, that only makes sense to me if you're pulling on these fault lines.
Right.
And you're affecting the seismic balance of this planet. You're also going to see massive volcanoes. And won't that affect the air quality and the and isn't
well, it,
it
does several things. You're right. The ones that happen on the ground, keeping in mind that 3/4 of the planet is covered with water, the ones on ground affect the air. The ones underwater affect the temperature of the ocean, and that's one of the things leading to the warming of the oceans. Is most volcanoes are under the ocean, and they're warming up these oceans. So you're right. When Krakatoa went off 110, 120 years ago, back in the 19th century, we had, I think it was 1 or 2 years, with no summer. And that, if Yellowstone blew its top, that could easily happen again.
How large is Planet X in comparison to the Earth?
Well, there's another video that I might have to send you. The title of it is Are We Alone? Everybody likes credentials, don't they?
Yes.
How's it? If you're going to draw a paycheck for looking at stars, Dave, how's this for credentials? The supervising astronomer of the United States Naval Observatory, Dr. Robert Harrington, being interviewed in his office at the United States Naval Observatory in Washington, D.C. I don't think the career path has any more upward mobility, do you?
No, it's
no.
That's, he's at the top of his.
Yeah,
what does he have? What does he have to say about this?
Okay. In this 10-minute interview on the DVD titled Are We Alone in the Universe, he talks about the 10th planet as a matter of scientific fact. He gives its size, 3 to 5 times the size of Earth. He gives its density being far more dense with a larger iron-nickel core. And he describes its orbit.
The implications are stunning. And let's explore some of those implications when we come back from the break. Stay tuned, everybody. More with John Moore on the other side. And also will be joining us will be our Under the Radar News correspondent to help me conduct this interview, Andy DeRiso. After this, we'll be back. Back to the Common Sense Show. This is Dave Hodges. And joining us tonight is our special guest and fellow RBN host, John Moore, whose show airs from 3 to 5 on Sunday, Central Time. And also joining us is our Under the Radar News correspondent, Annie DeRiso. And let me welcome Annie. Annie, are you there?
Yes, I'm here, Dave. Good to be on again. And thanks, John, for coming on with us tonight.
You're welcome, Annie. Good to be with you.
Well, John, let me just say by way of introduction here that Annie and her late significant other, my mentor, Bill Pollack, introduced me to this topic some years ago. And I have to say, although I was receptive to most of the things that Bill and Annie brought to my attention, this wasn't one of them. And, you know, I'm willing to eat a little bit of crow here and come full circle. And I told Annie that I thought we'd be about at the point we are coming into the second segment of the first hour. And I asked her to join us. She does our news feature every week. And Annie, so you've been listening right along and you heard John say something about this planet is 3 to 5 times larger. And I'm sure that you're just raring to go with a couple of questions for John.
Well, you know, in a thumbnail sketch, you know, my understanding of it, I've read a lot, or all of the Sitchin books. I'm now on Divine Encounters. But anyway, comes around, what, every 3,600 years or so, whether it comes between us and the sun, depends on how much damage there's going to be, and that this could have been what happened to prior civilizations to destroy them.
Right. In fact, I've seen timelines that show ancient civilizations ending 3,600 years ago and 7,200 years ago. Once you get back three cycles, it gets pretty murky. But we're finding more and more evidence of advanced civilization under these oceans. For example, between Okinawa and the main islands of Japan, apparently is one massive city the entire distance of stone buildings that are almost beyond human comprehension, the size of these stone buildings under the ocean.
Are you talking about Yamaguni?
Does it have a name now? I don't know.
Annie?
Yeah, Yamaguni. Yes, it is. It's Yamaguni in off Okinawa.
Right. Hmm.
Yeah, it starts with a Y.
Okay.
Yeah, and
it
the
didn't
one
have
down
a name
in the Caribbean.
Last time I was looking at it.
Yeah, they were monolithic structures that really defy, much like the pyramids, they defy our ability to duplicate the architecture and the engineering.
Right. And there's a pyramid that was found in China, and the locals all thought it was a small mountain that you could put about three great pyramids of Giza inside of.
Yes.
And there's been almost a total news blackout on that thing.
If I remember right, though, I did read a release on that one time when they were comparing pyramids. And believe it or not, this was actually on the AP. I think it was the Wang province of China, and they were comparing it to what they found in Bangkok. Very similar in origin. Yeah, John, we're kind of preaching to the choir here. I think I see where you're going with this,
right. That
our civilization here of mankind is not the first civilization of mankind that's risen up, been destroyed, and had to start over from some type of Stone Age beginning.
Well, that's true, and this is not the first time advanced civilization has been on this planet. If, Dave, if you were to go to Kashmir, that disputed area between Pakistan and India, with the right instruments tomorrow morning, you could find evidence of a nuclear device having been set off there about 12,000 years ago.
Well, in the ancient Indian folklore, they describe a nuclear explosion to a T. Well, we've got a caller on the line, and I'm not going to open it up for calls until the top of the hour, but I'll make one exception. That's because this particular caller put John and I together on this topic. So let's go to Tucson and welcome Sheldon to the air. Hi, Sheldon. How are you?
Hey, guys.
Hey, Sheldon.
What's on your mind, Sheldon?
I just wanted to add a few quick things in case John forgets to mention something here, but we also have the seed vault up in Norway, the Doomsday Seed Vault, and most of the construction for this was completed in about 8 months. Now, John says that there's been some rather unique last-minute preparations underway, and I would think that this is one of them, including what John reported 2 years ago, that Mountain House, a major emergency food supply distributor, was totally bought out of number 10 size cans by the federal government. Is that correct, John?
Not just our government, but governments, plural, is the inside information I got. And, of course, Mountain House had it on their website that they couldn't promise delivery before January 2009. They were so covered up.
Sheldon, I can verify that because Bill did talk to him right as that happened. He was talking to him when they came in and gave him their wish list and cleaned the place out.
Oh, wow.
So it is true.
And the other thing I wanted to mention was we also have the South Pole Telescope down in Antarctica, and Professor Jim McCanny talks a lot about this place. It's typical for, like, comets and stuff like that to come in from the south for some reason, and they're putting these telescopes up in the southern hemisphere, but uniquely they're not being put up in the northern hemisphere. And right after the South Pole Telescope went online, I just stumbled across this a few weeks ago. NASA was awarded a contract, or they how did that go, John? They awarded
a contract. Well, they awarded a contract to an outside vendor to move their people.
Yeah, at a cost of $74 million, which is three times more than the CIA spent to relocate their domestic division out to Denver. And this contract was issued in late 2007, which would have been just a few months after the South Pole Telescope went online. And this is a two-year contract with extensions for one-year increments if so desired. And here Obama's mentioning now that they're going to scrap the replacement program for the shuttle. And there's only four shuttle flights left, so this is sort of indicating to me that most of Florida will be underwater because the Kennedy Space Center is in Florida, of course, plus most of the other NASA facilities are near the coastline. So I'm in the process of doing a FOIA request with NASA about this relocation of their employees. This is something I stumbled across, and I brought it to John's attention.
I'm glad you did, Sheldon. It's another piece of the puzzle, and it's been very helpful.
And coincidentally, there's a civilian spaceport now in near Truth or Consequences, New Mexico. Well, I got to thinking maybe this is going to be the replacement site for our manned future space program in New Mexico, because the spaceport has a unique position whereby it sits highly above sea level.
Well, they built these things near the ocean to begin with out of fear of these things would go out of control and hurt people. They wanted to shoot them up over the ocean for that reason. I don't know if they have enough confidence now. They don't feel they need to do that or not.
shoot what up over the ocean?
Missiles.
Oh.
Yeah, to avoid a civilian catastrophe where a missile coming down in the middle of a city.
Right.
And that's very interesting. So NASA's being relocated. You know, John, originally I'm from Denver, and now I'm sitting here thinking, did I make a mistake in moving to Phoenix 25 years ago?
Well, Denver is not a real hospitable place to live if you're subsistence farming, shall we say?
Yeah, absolutely.
The federal government doesn't have that concern. They've got warehouses full of Mountain House freeze-dried food. But if you're trying to grow fruits and vegetables and raise chickens and rabbits and goats, Denver and the areas around Denver would not be the most hospitable place unless you really, really know what you're doing.
Just because of the weather.
The weather, a lot of that area is high desert. They really, they get snowfall, but the rest of the time it's awfully dry. It's a tough winter. It's a real tough winter. And if you're on your own without what we call normal utilities, it would be tough.
Okay, Sheldon, anything else for us?
I did want to interject, Dave, by saying you could move south out of Phoenix and come to Tucson. Maybe we're about 2,400 feet above sea level. The future Navy map say you have to be at least 400 feet above sea level. And, there's Tombstone, too. That's almost a mile-high city itself out in Tombstone. But then again, John says you have to factor in the possibility of all these millions of refugees that will be coming here from the West Coast.
Well, if you're more than half a tank of fuel away, there's going to be a lot less of them. If you're more than one fuel tank, which is typically 300 to 400 miles, you're not going to get too many refugees.
I sit out at about 700 feet. Phoenix is about 400 feet, depending on where you're at and a few of the peaks that are there. But I'm out in the rural area, and we have kind of a rising slope. So we estimate we're at about 800 feet. Someone's told me recently I'm at about 1,200 feet. So,
well, Google Earth can tell you in just moments there, Dave.
Yeah, I know, and I haven't done the search yet, John, because this has kind of snuck up on me.
Oh, okay.
and so, and I'm still evaluating, but let's go to the physics part of it. And Sheldon, you can stay with us just for a second here if you want to chime in on this. But if you look at the physics part of it, if you're introducing a planet 3 to 5 times the size of Earth coming in through the solar system, this explains why other scientists, the more rational crowd, the non-man-made global warming crowd, are saying global warming's going on every planetary body in our solar system.
Exactly.
This is a universal effect, isn't it?
It's a solar system effect, not the entire universe.
Exactly.
But,
that's what I mean, a solar system effect.
Yes, sir.
And you mentioned the effect of the sun, too, and I'll tell you something that popped in my mind. Could we get a related solar class flare to the degree that we could basically see EMP-type bursts here and take out all our electronics?
Well, the flare that we're most concerned about is one that would cook half the planet facing it for about an hour and a half, 160, 175 degrees. And the EMP, of course, would be part of that destruction of all grass crops facing that event would be part of it also.
Well, on that part of the Earth facing the sun, there wouldn't be anyone left to use the electronics anyway.
Well, if you're in shelter, it wouldn't take a whole... 160, 170 degrees is a lot of heat. I sit in a 160-degree sauna for an hour several times a week. I look at it as a healthy thing to do. It's a serious amount of heat for a serious amount of time. The radiation is what you want protection from. There's two parts to it. The radiation effect which is damaging, and the heat itself. If you get protection from the radiation just by being indoors, something with a metal roof especially, that would protect you from the radiation. The heat would be tough. If you don't have a weak heart and are healthy otherwise, you'd probably survive it.
But it seems to me that the fire risk would be catastrophic, tremendous, and very numerous.
Well, the flash point of paper is 451 degrees Fahrenheit.
Well, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about electrical circuits that would be fried and
they
start
would.
A fire.
There's a lot of built-in, and there would be, I don't want to discount this, there would be a lot of damage and destruction, no doubt. And the power grid would just basically burn itself out. And any point in the power grid, including homes and businesses that weren't properly protected with the right circuit breakers, yes, fires could start.
I did want to add something here, guys. Professor Jim McCanney talks about this. He calls it, if there's a incoming celestial object headed our way, it doesn't necessarily have to hit our planet. He calls it action at a distance. And
that's right.
As this object gets closer to us, it's going to discharge the sun, which acts like a giant solar capacitor. And I brought this up on John's show today. You know, I don't trust Alex Jones, but I think he's an insider, and he leaked something out on his show early last year. He said that there was an emergency county official somewhere in Indiana was told by FEMA and Department of Homeland Security that they need to harden their sites in Indiana and also prepare for an influx of like 400,000 refugees from Chicago. And I got to thinking, well, maybe that's part of the solar activity. They need to check out that these cities and municipalities have hardened sites.
Let's hold it right there, too, because in Gary, Indiana, just outside Chicago, Andy, do you remember the story we ran last year that city council there was asked by FEMA to build grave sites for 400,000 people?
Yes.
I remember that.
Is this maybe why we're seeing the FEMA detention centers built, because they'll actually will be the refugee camps?
Well, they'll have to do something with these people, and refugee camps is a logical and proper thing to do, seeing as how they're not going to warn us beforehand and leave us on our own.
Well, interesting. Sheldon, thanks for the call.
Hey,
and
going,
thanks again for bringing John and I together on this topic. Annie, let me throw it back to you.
Well, John, I was wondering, it seems like to me, or maybe it's just because we have more internet and more video cameras, but there seems to be an awful lot of bolides coming in. I mean,
there are, something, in effect, we didn't mention, and the bolides aren't necessarily part of what I'm about to tell you, but the 10th planet has a debris field that travels with it, about 250,000 miles wide of rocks, big rocks and little rocks. Now, these bolides, I can't say because I don't know whether they're part of the things that come along with Planet X, the debris field, but they might be. At some point, we're going to be passing through that debris field, I would say.
Okay, that's what I was thinking. You know, is this the preliminary run, you know, with things starting to come in?
It may be. And one of the things about this, Annie, is the compartmentalization. The government's very good and very clever at keeping secrets, and they've been doing it quite well for many decades. And this topic is one of their best-kept secrets. I'm amazed that I've come across these Navy veterans, and God bless the U.S. Navy Submarine Corps. they've been just a tremendous wealth of information, and I maintain, the confidentiality of these men. All but one of them remain and will remain anonymous as long as they choose to. But the Navy started these briefings, Annie, in 1979. I've tracked it back. One of my sources is a regular listener. He was in the Navy in 1979 in New Orleans when they had this first, probably one of the first briefings for flag rank officers on a weekend. And he says, John, admirals don't do weekend conferences. They showed up all bright and cheery, slapping each other on the back, smoking cigars, inquiring about each other's kids. When they left the conference, nobody was smiling, nobody was smoking cigars. They were all very somber after they saw the map. And my friend, who reported this, he saw the map too, he wasn't participant in the conference, and he was just a young sailor setting up the chairs, the lights, and the sound system. 30 years later, in 2009, he watches my video, sees my map, and then for the first time in 30 years, he understood what the map meant. All these decades, he didn't, but now he does, and he's willing to talk about that publicly. I've just used his first name only so far, and we haven't talked about him going completely public, but I don't think we're going to find a Navy briefing going back any farther than 1979 on this topic.
Yeah, because what, the Harrington was, what, 83?
The interview on Are We Alone was in the 80s. I think it was about that period of time, you're right. And unfortunately, Annie, he didn't get the memo. The memo that said, keep your mouth shut.
Yeah.
Well, I just got the memo that says we need to break for a commercial or we won't be able to pay our bills. And we come back, I want to know what John thinks about if the other governments are in tune to this. Stay tuned, everybody, back with John and Annie on the other side. Welcome back to the Common Sense Show. I think I just caught my breath here, John, as you're definitely taking our breath away, certainly mine, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners. We're also joined by our under-the-radar news correspondent, Annie DeRiso. Once again, thanks to Sheldon for bringing this topic to our attention and the Common Sense Show. John, as we went to the break, I broached the question with our feds and our agencies running for higher ground, so to speak. It seems to me that this would not escape the attention of some of our foreign counterparts, allies, right, and enemies alike. So what do you know about that?
Okay, well, let's talk about that a little bit. May the 8th, 2007, Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth and the Duke of Edinburgh visited the NASA Goddard Space Flight Institute because Her Majesty's suddenly taken an interest in astronomy. The NASA Goddard Space Flight Institute, Dave, is rumor control central as far as the science of this for our country.
Mm-hmm.
It was announced, I'm going back 3 to 4 years, that England was moving critical government offices away from the coast into higher ground, such as it is in England. They don't have mountains, as we would call them, but they do have some higher ground, and they've been making those moves. Shortly after the end of what we call the Cold War, in the early 90s, we found out that Russia was building a massive underground city in the Ural Mountains, which made no sense. The Cold War is over. Why would you do such a thing? Well, now we know why. Another government, this government is the Vatican. Summer 2008, the Vatican announced that they were closing the Vatican Library. It's the largest collection of ancient manuscripts on the planet. They said it was due to a structural problem in the main building. The place has been open every working day for more than five centuries. There is a persistent rumor that I haven't got verification that the Vatican may be moving to St. Louis, Missouri. St. Louis is the only city outside the Vatican where the Catholic Church owns enough buildings under roof, enough square feet of buildings under roof, that they literally could move the entire Vatican to. One of St. Louis's nicknames for decades has been Little Rome. Like I say, it's a persistent rumor with no verification, but it's a fascinating thing. China? Well, China has several problems. First of all, a lot of their agricultural land will be underwater, and they've got more than a billion mouths to feed. They may be eyeing our Midwest as a source of grain to feed their people. That's a distinct possibility. And they, being the People's Liberation Army, have been promising their single men soldiers American wives for quite a few years. And I just verified that through another independent source just in the past 2 weeks, that they've been making these promises to their men without wives for years. So, yes, the major governments are very aware. They're making their plans, and they're carrying them out. And they will continue to do so up until the last minute. No matter how much preparation they've got done, they will continue to make preparations up to the last minute.
John, one of the more popular themes that's beginning to emerge on my show, and I know some of the other RBN shows as well, is the subject of intentional depopulation. This is kind of a killing two birds with one stone, isn't it?
It plays right into it. The agenda of the powers that be goes back two or more centuries. Once they found out about this matter and they determined to their own satisfaction it was real, what they did, Dave, was incorporate it into their already pre-existing plans to, like you say, depopulate the Earth to the tune of 500 million people being left alive, just like the Georgia Guidestones indicate.
Well, that is fascinating. We're going to come back on the other side. We'll open it up for your calls. More with John Moore and our Under the News Radar correspondent, Andy DiRiso, after a word from these sponsors.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
The Common Sense Show. You can't dodge the Hodge.
Welcome to hour number two of the Common Sense Show. Our special guest tonight is fellow RBN host John Moore, and also joining us to help me with this interview is our under-the-radar news correspondent, Andy DiRiso. And before we return to the subject of the 10th planet entering our solar system and wreaking all the havoc that you're hearing about, I just wanted to remind everybody that RBN is having a pledge drive, and anyone who would like to donate to this great network can call 1-800-724-2719 during office hours, Monday through Friday, 10 to 6, or after hours you can go online to republicbroadcasting.org and donate online. And just as a reminder, too, you can always catch our show, as well as the many great shows on RBN, at www.republicbroadcasting.org and click the Listen Live button. And we're going to open it up this hour for your calls at 1-800-313-9443, or you can email us at thecommonsenseshow@yahoo.com. Okay, John, where do you think we should go next?
Well, there's a lot, some other circumstantial evidence I can mention, some of which you can easily verify, and others which is kind of private. For example, the nationwide building supply house, Lowe's. I have a confidential source in there who went to a staff meeting late spring of 2009, and he was told the following, that no new stores would be built anywhere near the East Coast, West Coast, or Gulf Coast. All existing stores in those areas would get routine maintenance only, no major upgrades. I found that to be very significant and very insightful.
Well, someone certainly might have some insider information there.
Absolutely. Well, when you get to Fortune 100 companies, I think you run into a lot of interlocking boards of directors, and at that level, they don't get their news from CNN and Fox. They get their news from insiders. So they're making decisions based on real information, not fabricated information.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've got a caller on the line, and of all places, he is calling from Wisconsin. So let's go to welcome John. Hi, John. You're on the show. Have you packed your bags yet?
Doing, and how are you guys doing? This is John from Wisconsin.
Yes.
How you doing, John Moore? You know me, my story.
Yeah, John, I expected your call. Thank you for calling.
Thank you, yes. We'll talk about my story, and I know if we have a break coming up, and you have to pull me over. Back in the 90s, I was told about this stuff from a female Air Force officer. She's a weather officer. She's stationed with the headquarters, the U.S. Space Command, Peterson Air Force Base, Colorado Springs, Colorado. That's my second home out there, Colorado Springs. She worked for the Global Space Operations Division, the Weather Operations Branch. And when we had a cookout, we became good friends. Her husband's from Wisconsin, but they were boyfriend, girlfriend when I first met them, and I stood up for their wedding. And during the summer 97, I started hearing this stuff about global warming, and I just out of the blue asked her, what's this global warming stuff? And she says, well, just promise don't tell anybody, but it's classified. And she said that this information was given to her about this stuff and what we're talking about now. And she says one morning at the conference room, she didn't attend this conference room. She saw rows of chairs. She saw a projector screen and overhead projector, by the rows of chairs. She saw a world map and United States map, but they didn't look like a map in the world atlas. And the first thing she did look at was the United States map. She looked at Wisconsin because her husband's from there. And it wasn't all underwater, but she said the coasts were like 15, 25 miles in. She said the state of Michigan's coasts were pretty much gone. And by Lake Erie, that was gone. And then she said Florida, Cuba, and the Bahama Islands were gone. Aleutian Islands were gone. And the tip of Chile and Argentina, the southern tip, was gone. And so she went back there to look at the maps again. And then later on that day, they had a meeting. There were civilians and Air Force generals, Navy admirals in there. And about 15, 20 people.
Okay, we're coming up on a break here, John. And when we come back, I'm going to hold you over, but we need to try to bring this to a focal point that ends up in a question for John. Stay tuned, everybody. We'll be back to talk more about Planet X after a word from our sponsors. Well, to date, I don't think we're reading much about Planet X, the 10th planet, on newswithviews.com, although I do love the site. And we've even got some of our own RBN hosts who write for them. But, John, you have produced a DVD that I found very, very compelling, and I'm going to watch the last 15 minutes of it. As I said at the top of the show, I withheld watching the ending because I wanted to do more of a spontaneous interview. I'd kind of got the idea. But tell people how they can get a copy of the DVD.
Well, my toll-free order line is 24 hours a day, is 800-592-9543. I say again, 800-592-9543. And, of course, at my website, thelibertyman.com, I think there's a link from RBN to my website. I'm not positive. I know they got my email address up there. But that's my email, that's my website, is thelibertyman.com.
Well, I love the way you laid everything out systematically and progressively. It was very, very easy to follow. So I think even the most feeble-minded of us, myself included, could follow this without much difficulty.
Well, Dave, I've done a lot of trial preparation for a lot of murders, and I look at this as trial preparation.
It really unfolded that way, I have to say, exactly. But anyway, joining us also is a caller, John, from perhaps soon to be underwater Wisconsin. John, let me say a couple things, okay? I'm from Colorado, and I've spent a lot of time at Peterson Air Force Base with my father being retired Navy. I also know a lot of people that live in the Broadmoor area or connected to Cheyenne Mountain and that facility when it was the eyes and ears of our defense network. Mm-hmm. I know how these people think. I know how they work. I was raised by the son of a naval intelligence officer, and I'm not doubting your story, but I'm going to ask you to pick it up at this point. The fact that this lady would tell someone, I would assume at this time a casual acquaintance, such classified and highly important material, risk her career, maybe even risk her life, I find to be really quite surprising.
Well, she trusted me, you know, and I told her, because I was in the United States Marine Corps, I had a secret security clearance. I was an embassy Marine, you know, and I told her I'd be quiet about it. And then, you know, when I heard John Moore talking about this stuff, I had to get consent from her. I said, would it be okay if I could talk about this? And she says, as long as I don't give her name or give too much that would connect her, because she does work for the National Weather Service.
But, John, you've just identified her because her gender is enough to narrow this down and to start asking questions and backtrack to this briefing you're alluding to.
Right.
Listen, I know how I was raised by a man who did this work. I know how these people think.
Right.
And I have locked horns with some of these types as I've gone through my advocacy work. And I think you really should be careful about not saying too much about what she's affiliated with and more about the message, because I think you're putting her at risk.
Right. Yes. I know I've talked about this before. Nobody's bothered her. But I think from now on, and I've been telling myself, I'm just going to start saying that a source told me this, that they worked at the U.S. Space Command back in the 90s, that this thing was coming. And I'm kind of more going to be saying that, because this is going to be probably the last time I'm going to give any much more information on that.
Okay. Now, let's go to the bottom line here. What is her trump card? What's her bottom line? What did she tell you in particular about your situation as in Wisconsin?
Well, when she saw the map, these computerized maps?
Yes.
Okay, she said that the coastlines like Lake Superior, like northern Wisconsin, Upper Peninsula, you know, the UP of Michigan, that was pretty much like, it looked like to her like maybe it's 10, 15 miles inland of coast that was underwater. And if you draw a line all the way down, she said that Door County, that's the county, that's the thumb that sticks out between Green Bay and Lake Michigan. She said that was gone, and then if you draw a line just the east coast of Wisconsin, that was pretty much gone underwater. You know, the shores of Lake Michigan, you know, Lake along Milwaukee and all that was pretty much gone.
What was her time frame?
When I asked her when this thing was going to happen, she said, this is 1997. You know, I still see her, by the way. I saw her last summer. I keep contact with her. She said in 1997, she says between 10, 15 years time frame. So we're past 2007, so you know the years are counting down. She says in that range, she says between 10, 15 years.
So I assume from what you're saying, she's out of the loop now as far as getting the newest information.
Probably out of the loop, yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Well, yeah, I mean, she works for the, which I said, but she doesn't have any inside contact information or anything like that. She has John's video and has read his material. So
that must have been a revelation for her. Okay, anything else, John?
If people don't believe what we're talking about, the Washington Times, Sunday, April 19, 2009, people can Google this, whatever, climate refugees in Pacific flee rising sea. And as we're speaking about Wisconsin, April 26, 2009, Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, good gains for a Great Lake. They said after near record lows, Lake Michigan's water level rises nearly 2 feet. And people can look that up on the internet.
That's huge. That's massive.
Yeah.
Well, you know, one of the things, too, and John, back to you real quick here, John Moore, one of the things that's going to be difficult to really wake up the people on this topic will be the amount of anecdotal, non-scientific evidence that comes to the forefront on this from the two instances that the caller just mentioned. What we do need is really some hardcore science. Unfortunately, the propaganda minions are in charge of the media, and that's probably not forthcoming. John from Wisconsin, I want to wish you luck up there, and let's hope you get out before the rising tide hits. Thanks for your call. Oh,
I will. Thank you very much for taking my call. Bye-bye.
Annie?
Well, I was just, all of this reminds me of those Phoenix meetings that you were going to. I think there were, what, two or three of them?
Oh, you're talking to me?
Yes.
You would put me on the spot with that. You know, there's some things I can say and some things I can't say. And, John, what she's alluding to and to the rest of the audience is over the past, oh, I'd say 15 to 18 months, I've been to three private briefings and actually was surprised I was invited until I found out really who was behind the meetings, and they had an affiliation with people who I've known in my past, including my own father.
Right.
And they are talking about an impending economic collapse, but it may not come from ramping up the printing presses, as we suspect, and losing our Moody's AAA rating and causing us to hyperinflate. It's more due to perhaps more natural causes. So there are
like
there is
being
an element.
A bit inferential there.
John, there is an element here in Phoenix that has some data that seems to parallel what you're saying, but they don't cross right over into the 10th planet. They don't go that far.
Well, one of the things that the Navy veterans, you know, the men I've been debriefing were company grade officers and lower. They were told what would happen. They weren't told why it would happen. So that there wasn't a need to know the why. There was a need to know the what. And so that was a bit of a disadvantage in doing this work and this research, because I wasn't talking to the scientists. I was talking to the men in the folding chairs being briefed.
Mm-hmm. And that's really where you're going to get your most accurate information. We're getting a lot of calls here from people who might be treading water. So let's go out to John on line one from Florida, and welcome to the show. Hi, John. What's on your mind?
Well, the first time calling on your show, I always listen to John's show on Sunday. I listen today. That's why I'm on the air tonight.
Well, good. Thank you. I appreciate the call.
Republic sells Camp FEMA also, and if you get Camp FEMA and John's video, then it all makes sense with the FEMA camps and John's video.
Yeah, we had Gary Franchi on the show, yeah, and I've seen the video. And this is why I broached the question earlier to John about could the FEMA camps really be for refugees, as they were saying. We thought at one time, Annie, didn't we, that this was a front for something more, shall we say, devious.
Well, I just got an email that's asking, could there be another reason for the underground bases with Planet X just being a source of misinformation? I mean, why else could they be building these underground bases?
No reason I'm aware of, Annie.
Okay.
The only possibility, Annie, is nuclear war, but then you'd have to ask why wasn't this done back in the 50s and 60s
exactly.
To a greater extent.
Right.
Anyway, am I still in the air?
Yes. Go ahead,
okay,
John.
I do recommend people buying John's video. I've had it more than a year now, and the Camp FEMA I got recently, and then it all ties in when you watch both videos, and I've been making copies of both.
Good. Go for it,
so,
John.
Anyway, thanks a lot.
Okay, well, thanks for your call, John, and please call again. Let's go to DJ in Illinois, is calling online, too. Hi, DJ, what's on your mind?
John is familiar with a couple things that I've brought to his attention in northwest Illinois. But if you look at a Google map and you go to the terrain, the very same place, the very same two counties that have been declared an international port authority, the northwest counties on the Mississippi, are also the highest terrain counties in Illinois. They're up quite a ways. In fact, the highest point in Illinois is in Joe Davis County. And I've got to get in touch with you too, John, about some more information about this thing.
Yeah, please do. Illinois's got some serious problems. Most of it's flat. Southern Illinois is real swampy in normal times. And the Mississippi River has high bluffs on the Missouri side of the Mississippi and flat plains on much of the Illinois side. Not all of it, but much of it.
DJ, hold just a second because I want to throw this out. You may be onto something, and you just lit a fuse in my brain. So let me throw this back to John Moore. John, I'm sure you've covered at least are aware of the North American Union and the fact that Kansas City is an international port. And I thought, right, how can you have an international port in Kansas City when it's on dry land? And that's part and parcel of the North American Union and the Captain Catamax Highway
System. That's a legal construct, not a naval term. It's a legal construct.
Yes, but could it really be a port in the literal sense because somebody who was behind this knew what was coming?
Well, the I-35 corridor is a critical part of this, and that goes through Kansas City. The Mississippi River will be 50 to 100 miles wide, basically splitting the country in two. In fact, U.S. NORTHCOM, which is only 6 or 7 years old, is already being split east-west at the Mississippi because it's easier to do it now, although it's difficult. It's much easier now than after the fact. You don't have bridges across rivers 50 miles wide. And the eastern capital, I believe, will be Atlanta. And, of course, the western capital will be Denver.
Wow. This is stunning. DJ, yeah, I'm sorry for interrupting. So, yeah, go ahead with your question.
No, there's a place called Highway 20, and that is part of, I believe, the corridors, the NAFTA corridors.
It's one of the branches.
In
now.
Here, in this area.
Well, DJ, let me hold you over here because we're right up against a break. And I'd like to complete this thought, so we'll be back with John Moore, Annie DeRiso, myself, and our caller after a word from these sponsors. Welcome back. 1-800-313-9443 is the number to call to be a part of the show. Or you can simply email us at thecommonsenseshow@yahoo.com. And in fact, we've got a few email questions lined up that we'll get to after the bottom of the hour. And we held over DJ from Illinois. And DJ, you want to complete your thought for John?
Well, basically, you've got the highest point in Illinois, northwest Illinois, and directly across the Mississippi is a very high area of Iowa, too. And the bill that was hushed and pushed in a hurry through the Illinois legislature last year and then became effective August of last year, seeds or attempts to seed the landmass of two entire counties to this international district. And then you have a Great River International Group, and when you check into the backgrounds of those four people, you really start to get a little scared.
Well, give me an example about their background.
Okay. Warren Jackman, main principal. He went to one of the elite military academies, the one that Lieutenant Eric Schein went to. Yeah, I'm trying to think of the name of it.
Let's throw this back to John for some comment, and then we're going to move along. Go ahead, John.
Okay, well, DJ's doing some work up there and uncovering some stuff, and she has more work to do, and she and I will be communicating in private. But it's very significant, the topography, the fact that that area is the highest point in Illinois, directly across from a very high point in Iowa, is very significant, I think, and she and I will be communicating about that in private and trying to learn more. It's just more pieces of the puzzle, as best I can tell.
Sounds like good commercial real estate pre-positioning before the catastrophe.
Absolutely.
Insider knowledge. Yep. DJ, excellent call, And I appreciate you calling in, and hopefully we'll find out more as you find out more. John, quick.
Sure.
Yes, thank you. Quick question here, John, before we go into the break, and we may not complete this before we go into the break, but is this planet coming in and what's coming with its debris field and so forth, is this just an accidental freak of nature, or is there some kind of intent possibly behind it?
Well, it's a 3,600-year cycle, and you may be getting into an area of philosophy and spiritual beliefs here real easy, but there's more than enough records from the last two passages that left people on the planet had calendars and left written records 3,600 years ago, which is basically when Moses was exiting Egypt, the Exodus, and 3,600 years before that was the Great Flood with Noah. Multiple cultures left written records, had calendars, and thank goodness for Emmanuel Velikovsky, who wrote books about these things, documenting and putting together the pieces. He was hammered mercilessly. Basically, all he did, Dave, was compare calendars, which nobody had taken the time to do. And then he came up with the conclusions that he did based on the work of real archaeologists that really were studying ancient Egypt, ancient China, ancient South America, and ancient Scandinavia, all of whom left records and had calendars, and recorded the same events happening at the same time, mm-hmm. 3,600 years ago and 7,200 years ago.
Atlantis, possibly?
Atlantis may have been three cycles back, not two. 12,000 years ago, for a number of reasons, we know that there was a very advanced high technology on this planet. The Atlantis myth is probably not a myth. It probably was an ancient high-tech civilization.
You know, just a quick note here, referencing back to DJ and her question about Lieutenant Eric Schein. Mike, our producer, tells us that he was a graduate of the United States Merchant Marine Academy at Kings Point. So thanks to Mike for that information.
Thank you, Mike.
And clearing that up. I understand what you're saying about the spirituality part of it. There is intent or malevolence behind this, because then we get into Zacharias Hitchens' work. But let me go a different direction here, and I'm going to be a real bad lawyer for a minute, because I'm going to ask a question that I have no idea what the answer is to. But are you familiar at all with Richard Hoagland's work with regard to structures on the moon and Mars, face on Mars?
I am, in fact. A gentleman I know was his house guest for a short time. There are, once again, and this goes to Professor McCanny talks about this frequently, there are written records of historical records on this planet of people watching the water and atmosphere being sucked off of Mars. It was a water planet at one time. There's more and more mainstream evidence of that, by the way. And the likelihood of there being intelligent life there is very high. And yes, I'm familiar with Hoagland's work. And there's anomalies there, and I've been working with Stuart Best on this also, and his work, it kind of takes off where Hoagland's ends.
Well, we've got someone on the air with us here, Annie, whose significant other Bill knew Richard Hoagland quite well. I've had conversations with him myself, but not to the degree that Bill did. Annie, do you want to take this in a particular direction? Because I think you see where I'm going with this.
Yeah, I just know that before Bill died 2 years ago, he was still saying that he was a friend of Hoagland's, like, for 5 or 6 years, and drove him around and took care of his mail and just, you know, did all sorts of things for him. But
Annie, let's hold that until we come back from the break, because this is going to be rather involved, and I do want to see if there's a connection here on this. Stay tuned, everybody. We'll be back with John Moore and Annie DeRiso after a word from our sponsors. Welcome back to the Common Sense Show. Our special guest tonight is fellow RBN host John Moore, who hosts the show, The John Moore Show, which airs from 3 to 5 on Sunday afternoon, Central Time. And we're discussing Planet X, the 10th planet, and the possible or probable, depending on your point of view, havoc that this planet can cause as it enters our solar system. And as we went to the break, we were discussing the possibility that perhaps this 10th planet and its cycle of every 3,600 years may be related to some of Richard Hogan's work with his discoveries of Shroud on the Moon, the Face on Mars, and so forth. And John, before I turn it back over to you and Annie, you know, I have seen Hoagland's photographs that he's gotten from the Viking Explorer, and I know NASA calls it lights and shadows, but lights and shadows and natural phenomena don't work at uniform 45-degree angles, and that's what I saw repeatedly through these photographs. That defies the odds and laws of chance. So with that having been said, let me throw it back to Annie.
Well, I was just going to say that Bill was saying as of 2.5 years ago that Hoagland still knew things that he was not putting out to the public. Now, I don't think anything that he's put out in the last two and a half years would be anything that he would have held back for 10 years that he already knew. So it seems to be he knows something he's still not talking about.
Well, John, let me phrase that in the form of a different question. How relevant do you think the Hoagland work is in paralleling the cycle that you're bringing forth? Do you think there is an interconnection there?
The information I'm aware of, Dave, is that what happened to Mars was more likely related to Venus coming into our solar system as a comet and becoming a planet. Venus caused tremendous problems in our solar system for years and years, for our planet and other planets. And I think that's what caused the devastation on Mars was Venus, not the 10th planet. Mm-hmm. But what it does demonstrate is what Professor McCanny refers to as action at a distance. It doesn't have to physically hit us to cause massive problems. The interaction with electrical energy and with gravity is enough by itself. You know, our moon, for example, our moon is a fairly small object, and there's enough power there to move the weight of all the water, of all the oceans, every 24 hours. It's called the tides. Now, that's a fairly small object. Granted, it's not that far away, 250,000 miles, but it's a fairly small object causing tremendous impact on a daily basis on this planet. That's an example of action at a distance right there.
Well, let me tell you what else.
Could it rip our moon away?
Say again?
Could it rip our moon away? Because supposedly there's ancient esoteric writings that talk about when the moon came here, that we always did not have this moon.
Well, that would be speculation on my part, Annie. It hasn't so far. Every passage it hasn't, but that doesn't necessarily preclude it happening at some future time, no.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Sheldon just sent me an email sometime back here after his call and said there is a current military hush-up of incoming space rocks. And I believe Sheldon's indicating that the military is trying to keep this classified.
Right.
John,
well, that's NASA.
This?
NASA is the military, and as of a few months ago, NASA began making all incoming objects a classified matter. So that's what they did. Yeah.
Well, this debris field, how wide did you say it was?
It's 250,000 miles wide on either side of the 10th planet.
So we would see a lot of space rock, perhaps asteroid-type materials? I mean,
well, what's the difference between a meteor and an asteroid? I'm not sure. I guess it's the size. But we in the past have taken hits. In fact, I found out doing this research that there's a crater in my neighborhood. When I say my neighborhood, within 20 miles of where I'm sitting, more than a mile wide, a meteor crater more than a mile wide. Larger than the one that all the tourists visit down there off Route 66, which I saw as a child. And there's a string of these large craters in a line across the United States, it turns out. Very large craters, a half mile and a mile more than wide.
Well, my concern is if these space rocks are able to penetrate the atmosphere without burning up, one would be the tsunami risk all across the planet, and secondly would be the rising dust and silt and possible resulting volcanic explosions could cause nuclear winter, and we could go the way of the dinosaurs.
Well, if enough of them hit, I guess that would be one of the possibilities, would be 1 or 2 years with no summer and a dramatically reduced growing season, especially in whichever hemisphere they hit. You know, we have basically two weather systems, one north of the equator, one north, south of the equator. Chances are the dust would stay pretty much put in either the northern or southern hemisphere, depending on where it hit.
So this could be, right, too, why they're not actively trying to put up any sort of defense for anything incoming, because they know it would be useless if the spray is that wide.
It would be if they know what's coming at us, and if they made the determination, it would be futile. Annie, of course, they would not do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Better to seek higher ground.
And they're doing multiple locations, so if they lose one or two or three, they've still got backup places where for continuity of government and continuing the human's existence.
Is there any reason why we're continuing keeping that old space bucket up there called the space station? Does this play into this at all?
I don't have information on that, Dave. I really don't. I don't know if it's in a position to make observations that would help them or not. And a lot of things will continue in a normal sense, even though they're totally unrelated to this matter up to the last minute.
Yeah, see, I'm looking for things that would either add to or take away from our eyes and ears of defense of the planet in some regard. And do you remember when the powers that be wanted to take down Hubble?
Right. Right, they said it was wouldn't work anymore. It was outdated. Then they found a bunch of money to fix it up, didn't they?
Well, they did. And then you have to wonder, what direction are they pointing it, and are they showing us the right direction when they transmit photos back to Earth, and are they secretly at times turning this to other things? See, I think they had planned to take it down, go dark, but continue to use it, so they could track what was coming in. That would be the logical guess. How many astronomers in the mainstream do you think are aware of this, outside the circle of NASA?
That's a good question, and I'm not sure I've got a good answer for that. Many of them, and here's how, I don't speak for Professor McCanny, but he talks about this publicly a lot. Many astronomers are connected to sources of funding connected to the government, either directly for the government or through grants and such as that at universities that come from the government. Therefore, they will not risk their employment by going public with what they know.
In your research, John, have you run across anything about Planet X causing pole shifts?
Yes, I have. And there's two types of, there's a magnetic pole and there's a true north pole. Magnetic north has been changing dramatically for years. Well, our main concern, however, is true north changing, and that has happened in the past also, and it's well documented. The Book of Isaiah, you have the Israelis having a longer day to defeat their enemy. The only way that can happen is for the planet to roll over in space. And Velikovsky did his homework and found that when they had a longer day in Israel, the sun didn't come up in China when it was supposed to. Both cultures had written records and calendars, and then once you line up the calendars, you find the same event happening on the exact same day.
So when this occurs, where is the best place to be to survive this calamity?
Well,
the pyramids.
The pyramids are the exact center of the world's landmass, and you're right there, Annie. The closer you are to the equator, the less you're going to feel the effect. Now, for example, if you're in Maine, and you get a 20-degree pole shift, you could end up with winters of Washington, D.C., or the winters of Siberia. It's an extreme. But that the farther north you are, the more extreme the difference is going to be. And if you look at the cultures that we're aware of now that have been fairly old, most of them are fairly close to the equator, aren't they?
Yeah.
That was surviving documentation, yes.
Right. Right. You know, China, India, Egypt, and so forth.
Is this why we maybe saw a migration from Asia through Alaska down through Canada into what today
is the
United States?
Well, that may or may not be related, but there's a high likelihood that there was civilization on the Antarctic continent. It's pretty well known, and I'm sure both of you know, that Christopher Columbus had copies of charts that show the Antarctic with no ice.
Right.
And human beings made that, and they made it when it was ice-free, unless they had imaging technology that we've only had the last 60 years, which is a possibility too. But human beings did make maps with the Antarctic with no ice, and Christopher Columbus had it in 1492.
I think they could have been Egyptian or Phoenician maps that back that far.
It's hard to say. The Phoenicians were known to be a seafaring people, but
the Egyptians were not.
Just another example of you know, the farther you are from the equator, the more damage you're going to take.
But interesting point, though, John. The Egyptians that are given credit for building the pyramids, which certainly they didn't have the technological sophistication, but they're given the credit, yet we see these pyramids all over the planet that parallel each other, yet the Egyptians were not seafaring people. And so we probably had some type of global governance or planetary consciousness, at least communication among engineers and architects that were building these things some time ago, and they were wiped out when this happened. Now, I'm going to come back to something that... And this is pure supposition, and I'm going to definitely take my scientific hat off here. But I asked you earlier about, was this planned or is this just a natural cycle? And perhaps it's a natural cycle, but just consider for a second, if you had a planet for the second, third, fourth, tenth time on the edge of space exploration as we are, and you look at Mars and the moon and so forth as maybe evidence of this happening prior to us in NASA, what better way to eliminate the competition?
Well, you're right. And the Bible is an excellent source for many things, and the Bible does has proven itself accurate time and time again scientifically, although the atheists don't want to hear about it. And the Bible does talk about wormwood. It does talk about what are apparently beings from someplace else, the Nephilim. I would not bet against the Bible. I wouldn't do it. Now, one of the things, I didn't mention this, but Professor Harrington, supervising astronomer of the United States Naval Observatory, does say that life as we know it could exist on the 10th planet. How it would exist in a deep space without sunlight as we know it, I don't know. And I'm not Professor Harrington, so, but I do know what he said, because he said it in front of a color camera. And
that's because physics might be a little different. You know, Annie, I'm sure that, well, you may not be, but I don't want to put words in your mouth, but Richard Hoagland speaks about this rather intelligently when you get into the subject of hyperdimensional physics. For example, the light emitted and the heat generated on the planet Uranus, just as an example, far exceeds what it should be because of its distance from the sun. And if you use a different physics model that involves multiple dimensions, it may explain how this planet can traverse the solar system yet maintain a consistent ecology that would support life if these people, quote unquote, have mastered moving in and out of the proper dimensions.
Well, they have technology beyond anything we can imagine, except at the extremes of science fiction, I'm sure.
Well, the Bible does get into this, though, don't they, with Nibiru and the visitors to Earth Woman in populating the planet.
They liked our women, didn't they?
They sure did. Well, let's get into that a little bit. What does the Bible say about wormwood and the consequences?
Well, I'm not a Bible scholar, first of all. Most of my dealings have been with confidential informants. But I think we can look at what happened with Exodus as an accurate example of what the 10th planet does. For example, when the River Nile turned red, water all over the planet turned red, not just the River Nile. That's the water they happen to have handy to look at. Manna from heaven, a honey-colored substance, sweet-tasting, that you could pick up and eat every morning. The Hebrews in the Sinai Desert did that. Well, people in South America, in China, and in Scandinavia did the same thing, and Velikovsky proved it with already accepted records left that were found by archaeologists with the calendars once they were lined up. We think it was probably hydrocarbons in the atmosphere when the sunlight hit them and warmed them up. They fell to the ground. You could pick them up and eat it. So the Bible is very accurate in giving us records that are verified by other records left in other cultures.
I just wish they had addressed this more to what's going to happen in our time.
Well, we can expect the same effects. Water turning red, manna from heaven, tidal waves, all these things that have happened in the past will happen again.
Well, let's go to preparation if there is such a thing. What are you, John Moore, doing to try to survive what you believe is coming?
Well, I have a stock of grain, several tons of grain, as a matter of fact. I live deep in the mountains of the Missouri Ozarks, as I say on my radio show every week. I have put together a group of people that are ready to help each other with the skills necessary to get through a long-term crisis, medical skills, communication skills, skills to grow fruits and vegetables and take care of small animals. Of course, I have my skills as a special forces trooper and defensive skills. All these things come into play. Of course, being part of a community is part of it, and having a sense of community is very important. The island concept of I'll get 40 acres in the middle of nowhere is a quick way to end up dead. You need to be part of a community, and I tell people these little communities will stand together as a community, or they will go down together as a community. So that's a very important part of it. I emphasize spiritual preparation first and foremost, Dave. That is extremely important. In fact, it is the most important thing, is spiritual preparation. After that comes skills. Skills of a ham radio operator, the skills of emergency medical treatment, and all the skills found on small farms and ranches all over the United States. Operating, maintaining, repairing equipment, raising small animals, raising fruits and vegetables, all these skills, growing, gathering, preparing, and storing food. Multiple skills that are quite common on small farms and ranches. Ham radio skills are not. Emergency medical treatment beyond very simple things are not. And I stress people and urge people to get these skills now while we appear to have the luxury of time to do so.
Or collaborate with people who have them. We'll be back to put a wrap on this great interview with John Moore and my co-host tonight, Annie DeRiso, after a word from these good sponsors. Our special guest tonight has been fellow RBN talk show host John Moore from The John Moore Show, which airs on Sundays from 3 to 5 p.m. Central. And certainly this has been a teaser for my listening audience that may not be around in the afternoon to always listen to John's show. But also let me use this as a chance to promo our archives. For a mere $1.33 a month, you can listen to all the great programming on RBN. So I'd encourage all my listeners who are archive members to go listen to John on a regular basis if that doesn't fit your time schedule, because you'll get much more on this topic. John has also produced a DVD called Global Warming, What the Government Isn't Telling You. And very quickly, John, for the listening audience, again, please tell us how we can get a copy of that great video.
Right. Either at my website, thelibertyman.com, or my toll-free number, which is 800-592-9543. I say again, 800-592-9543. That's 24 hours a day. Very nice young men and women at a family-owned business in St. Louis.
Well, it's also a very informative and chilling but entertaining DVD, and I really appreciated you sending that to me. Let's go to the lines for one quick call. Keith from Indiana, we've got time for one quick question for John.
Yes, it's not a question, it's a correction. The flood of Noah was 1,000 years before the Exodus, not 3,200 years. If you study the time periods given in the Bible, particularly Genesis 5, the flood was 1,656 years after the fall of Adam. You can reconstruct from Genesis 11, verses 10 to 26, Abraham was born 292 years after the flood.
Okay, well, let's take that under advisement. Yeah, we're right up against the end of the show. And Keith, I wish we had more time to go there with you, but I'm sure that John's going to take a look at it, and maybe we'll come back on in our new segment and broach that. John, do you have a quick 30-second or less response?
Well, I will look at that and review that. It's not consistent with what I know, but I will take it under advisement. And you're right. The RBN archives are a valuable resource for all these hosts, which are excellent, crew that Mr. Stattmiller's put together, and being able to listen at your leisure. It's something we didn't know even didn't even exist not too long ago, the ability to listen to radio at a time of your choosing. It's a wonderful service, and dirt cheap, $1.33 a month, good grief, you know.
I know, $1.33 is just ridiculously inexpensive, but
right.
But not only that, I mean, we are not controlled, censored by our sponsors, by our ownership. John and I are both free to come on the air and tell it like we believe it is. John, you've been, you're not only a terrific talk show host, but you've been a terrific guest tonight, and you've given my listening audience, who may not have been exposed to this topic to any degree before, a lot to think about tonight.
Good.
And I want to thank you for joining us, and we're going to follow this, and I would imagine at some future date we're going to do a follow-up on this subject, but I want to thank you for joining us on the Common Sense Show.
Thank you, sir, and thank you, Annie.
Okay.
Okay, thank you, John.
Good night, John.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Wow, Annie, it seems like we come to this point a lot when we have a terrific guest on like John that we're left speechless. And again, Keith, and forget my manners, I want to thank you for your call, and I just wish we had more time to explore it. I'm sure John will get on that, and if he gets back to me with that, I'll air that for you. But anyway, Annie, you know, this was a topic that I was deaf, dumb, and blind to, and you're probably still in amazement, and I know Bill is in amazement that I would even touch this topic, but with all the relocation of the federal agencies, it got my attention. Anyway, Annie, we're out of time, and just quick note here, next week, Grant Jeffries, Biblical Prophecy and the End Times, and the following week, Catherine Austin Fitz, The Ultimate Insider. Annie, you did a great job. I could not have done this quality of an interview with such a good guest without your expertise and your knowledge on Planet X. So again, Annie, on behalf of me and my audience, thank you, and to the rest of you, same time, same place, next week. God bless everybody, and have a great week.